Hello and welcome to another Emmy edition of the Water Cooler Podcast. I'm your host Clarence Moy, and today I'm joined by Sam Boyd, the creator of the HBO Max anthology series Love Life. Now, Love Life stars Anna Kendrick as Darby, a woman who's grown as... This happens maybe once or twice a year. I just get tongue-tied. All right, let me start all over. Sorry about that. Hello, and welcome to another Emmy edition of the Water Cooler Podcast. I'm your host, Clarence Moy, and I am joined by Sam Boyd today, the creator of the HBO Max anthology series, Love Life. Now, Love Life stars Anna Kendrick as Darby, a woman whose growth as a human being is shaped by all of the people she meets on her journey toward love. Sam, welcome to the Water Cooler.
Thanks, Clarence. Thanks for having me.
So I will give you the same benefit that I give all other people who are joining me on this podcast. I understand that we are all living under crazy circumstances, not only because of the pandemic, but also with the ongoing social unrest that has happened over the past month. So I really appreciate you joining me here and talking about your show. I know it's strange to be talking about things like this at a time like this, but you know, we all do it for our art, and hopefully this is contributing to some happiness somewhere.
Of course. Thank you, Clarence. Yeah.
Definitely. All right. So, Love Life on HBO Max, where did the concept originally originate?
It started for me a few years ago in thinking that an interesting way to explore a character's life would be sort of through the lens of each of their interpersonal connections, each of their relationships. And obviously the show is sort of at least superficially a romantic comedy, but I think really it was always about all the connections in a person's life for us and just the ways that we are shaped by the people that we love and the people that we know. I'm always sort of interested in a character first, or just in story, you know, stories and structures that will sort of be conducive to character studies. And it felt like, I hadn't seen something like that before, where we were kind of jumping through time within the body of a season of television and really sort of honing in on one person's experience before, you know, in subsequent seasons, jumping to the perspectives, being just as dedicated to the perspectives of every other character that we end up following. That over the course of the series, the idea would be to sort of, you know, constantly broaden the scope of the show and constantly expand our universe so that we're showing, you know, as many ways as possible that there are to be a person and to try to love people and seek acceptance and validation and all of that stuff. And so, you know, it really came from, I mean, I think honestly it even started as like an idea for a book of short stories or something like that, but there had been so many amazing and ambitious uses of the sort of half hour season of television, now that we've gotten this, you know, the kind of 5 hour movie structure that, you know, so many shows have used so well, whether it's Transparent or Atlanta or Girls or any number of shows. And so it occurred to me that this would be, you know, an interesting sort of use of that real estate and that sort of structure.
So how did you get Anna Kendrick involved in this?
So I wrote, it's a very lucky and somewhat boring story, but it basically was a situation where I wrote the pilot on spec and was always excited and hopeful that I would be able to make it, but even just thought it could be a writing sample or something like that. Right. And we just lucked out where she got a hold of it and wanted to do it, and we ended up, you know, we didn't talk to anyone else. And of course, you know, when you hear, you know, when the first thing you hear is, oh, Anna Kendrick wants to, you know, do your show, it was very exciting and it was amazing to work with her. So it sort of, it came together in an extremely lucky way. And I'm still wondering how it happened, but.
You know, it's so unique too, that you do see such a perfect marriage or blend of actor and writer. Like, you know, it just seems like this, you know, obviously this wasn't true, but it seems like this series was almost written for her and for her, you know, eccentricities or quirks as an actor. Did she have input on the creation or, you know, the evolution of Darby as she sort of came on board and started to understand the character?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, I always work in as collaborative a way as possible. And a big part of that has always been my relationship with the actors. And I think especially in this case where, you know, as we were just discussing, like, it's this character study and that's, you know, there are no load bearing walls. Like that's, mm-hmm. that's all there is. So if it doesn't work, there's nothing. And, you know, because of that, obviously I was always extremely interested in, you know, being able to talk to Anna about how we were sort of developing the character and getting the story on its feet and having, you know, having the journey and the character's development be informed by Anna's experience or even just, you know, feelings she had known and conversations that we were able to have. I always, you know, I refer even to the, this is kind of corny, but like I refer to the actors as like the department heads of the character almost, you know, where it's this sort of thing of, you know, I in a vacuum wrote this pilot and was very proud of it, but it was one person having experienced, you know, one person's life and only knowing that, you know, and sort of me knowing the limits of my own experience and wanting to crack it open. And I think especially in TV, which is, you know, even more collaborative than film, just because it's such a beast and you're kind of building the track in front of the train as you're going. You know, it would have behooved me anyway to sort of be as collaborative as possible and as open. But I think with this, it was just the way to make the show as good as we could make it and to make the character, you know, especially Darby, but all the characters feel kind of as rich as we could make them feel and as complex and as deep. And, you know, and Anna is just such an unbelievably smart person. She's an incredible actress, which I think, you know, so many people know. But, you know, I think like a lot of things on the show as well, we really tried to listen to it as we got it on its feet, as we actually made the show. So that, for instance, you know, the pilot was written about this kind of, you know, this character at one stage in her life where she's, you know, in her earlier mid-20s and kind of figuring things out. And we obviously, you know, end up following her over the course of like the better part of the subsequent decade. But, you know, all of my ideas of like, oh, the character could be this or the journey could be this, you know, were shaped by, you know, obviously as we wrote, but even just as we shot, shaped by the ways that Anna sort of melded with the character and the ways that the other actors melded with their characters and you know, and sort of parts of her as a person, I think, found their way in even, you know, subconsciously. And I think what we were after was, again, sort of just something that felt as real as possible and as, you know, non-bullshitty as, I don't know if I can say that, but, you know.
Yeah, please. We're an explicit podcast, so that's fine.
No, you know, as sort of non-bullshitty as possible and that, in my experience, the way to do that is to open it up and really, you know, work with everyone you're working with instead of thinking you have the answers.
Yeah. So when you're trying to achieve that sense of reality, and you mentioned, you know, a little bit of Anna came, you know, into Darby, how much of Sam is in any of the characters within the show?
I think there's definitely pieces of me, you know, here and there. There's definitely a good deal of kind of my voice, even just in some of the humor or some of the, you know, some of like the incidental dialogue and stuff like that. You know, from the beginning, Darby is a character where I was, you know, I made the character female because when I, you know, the way that I write, which is often, you know, about characters and stories that are pretty close to my own world and my own life, and trying to kind of get at what that has felt like, you know, if I, you know, I think people are always curious about these, you know, female characters that I write. And I think obviously I'm just interested in women. I think they're more, you know, complex and compelling than men a lot of the times, especially in a story like this. But a lot of it too is just wanting some kind of distance so that it's not some one-to-one thing where, you know, I'm writing myself as the protagonist and it's like a, you know, like Garden State or something like that, you know, and so in trying to achieve that distance, you know, you end up wanting to bring other, you know, other things into the character and trying not to put, you know, pieces of yourself in it as much, but, you know, that always ends up in there too. And so then, you know, Darby, I think like I was when I was single, you know, is someone who is sort of like, you know, thirsty for connection and in a way that very much, you know, becomes a hindrance. And so there are aspects of Darby, I think for sure that, you know, started with me, but I think like everything else, and like I was just saying about kind of working with Anne in general, you sort of start in one place, and by the time it's really a thing, a living, breathing thing that you've shot and edited and scored and whatnot, it's sort of, you know, this big stew, this amalgamation of kind of, you know, everybody that worked on it, that's brought themselves to it and put their hearts into it, and just the sort of sum total of all that stuff.
So, you know, I see you yourself are married. Did you take these scripts home and you know, share these with your wife and get her perspective on it too? Because you've got, you know, Anna kind of being that, you know, in some ways, you know, giving additional perspective and additional, you know, female voice. And do you do that at home? Do you take your work home basically?
Yeah, I definitely do. I definitely take my work home, especially at the beginning when I was writing the pilot, because I wrote it at home. So I had to. But yeah, no, you know, literally yes, and figuratively yes. You know, my wife is someone that I just trust implicitly with all of this stuff, and she's the, you know, she was the first person to read the pilot. She was the first person that I would, you know, bounce really any idea off of, and you know, and a lot of amazing ideas came from her. A lot of sort of us being pointed in certain directions and not others came from her. You know, obviously certain aspects of like the authenticity of the female experience, I think were helped by her as she checked stuff out. But, you know, that aspect of the show, I think, was also obviously made more authentic by my co-showrunner Bridget Bedard and our writer's room that, you know, was largely female and wanting, you know, people to bring their own experiences to it to tell those stories. But yeah, you know, with my wife, even she was the one who, you know, even big and small things, but she was the one who was like, you have to have a Sarah episode. You have to have an episode about them being best friends. And even I at first was like, oh, I don't know, you know, can we get away with that? Is that, you know, is that if we have the mom one and that, does it feel like cheating or whatever? And then of course it's, you know, probably the best part of the show. And that was something she had pushed for. So, you know, it's one of those things where I think she's always been so helpful, because a lot of the time I'm sort of using my own experience as a way to then imagine some other situation, as opposed to like processing something that's going on with me and her. There's not a lot of like her reading it and being like, what, you know, are you trying to tell me something? It doesn't really happen, you know, as much, which I think is helpful, and makes it so that I can just sort of rely on her for her incredible creative feedback and not worry as much about her thinking I'm, you know, like gonna, you know, run away or something like that.
Yeah. I think that Sarah episode is a great addition, because it kind of rounds out the whole theme of your life grows by the people that you interact with. And it's not just romantic relationships, it's familiar relationships, it's your close friend relationships. You're constantly growing and evolving based on the people in your orbit, and you may not be romantically inclined to the people in your orbit, but they still influence you nonetheless. Right. So I think that's one of the strongest aspects of the show.
Thank you.
So, glad that made it in there.
Yeah, me too. Definitely. Yeah, and I think, you know, as we sort of built the show out, that became really clear to us, and that's something we were really interested in, was just the ways that, you know, I don't know, it's just interesting. I feel like we all go through life and you know, people feel so lonely, or, you know, when they're with people, when they're not, and you know, when they have friends, or when they're missing their friends, or you know, with their family or not, and just being able to look at sort of all the ways that other people, you know, make us who we are was mm-hmm. really what it became about on a base level, more than any of the, you know, again, any of the kind of more superficial, like which guy is she going to end up with kind of romantic comedy stuff, which I think was never as interesting to us. and was more just like a fun kind of Trojan horse.
For sure. I want to ask one specific question, and this deals with the flashback episode, the Luke episode, where she's younger, and you see the young Darby. What, in your opinion, and I've thought about this for a long time, and I haven't quite arrived on a decision yet, but that the lie, the cancer lie that she makes that takes her out of school eventually, what does that give you in terms of the narrative and in terms of the characters' arcs? Like, where are you intending to use that, and how does that sort of flow?
Right. Yeah, you know, we wanted to make a flashback episode, I think, from the beginning, and for us, you know, it's funny because on one level, part of building a character for me is even when we're writing it and even when we're in the room talking about it, it's always hard to me to kind of reduce it to, you know, to sound bites or to kind of like sort of, you know, concise, like right answers. Because to me, so much of it is when you're trying to dig into the complexity of a person and the dualities of people or the sort of, you know, the vast and kind of varied nature of people's personalities, and especially over time, the mistakes that they make and the things that they do, you know, for love, it can be hard to kind of just draw a clear line. And I think part of it was, there was just something about that story that felt really compelling to us, and the kind of messiness of it and the desperation, that it kind of endeared us to the young person who would have made that choice, who would have made that mistake. And I think also, you know, that in this show, where sort of, again, in the present and for a good deal of it, we are looking at something, you know, not unfamiliar, which is a young woman in New York sort of, you know, searching for love, you know, that it felt like a wrench we could kind of throw into it that would hopefully give people kind of pangs of recognition as a result of that specificity and the kind of just like, it just felt like the kind of thing you kind of, you know, you can't make up and just such a kind of, you know, I guess, I don't know that it's necessarily like the key to her as a person or anything, but I think it just sort of was a way for us to show how long, you know, this person has kind of struggled to connect and how long this person has kind of, you know, desperate is like a sad word or one that has negative connotations, but how long, you know, this person has hungered for love. And I think being able to put it at this point in the season where it's in the middle of this relationship with Magnus, and we're able to kind of have those, you know, that episode and then the episode on either side of it create this little kind of trilogy, you know, where we see her sort of, you know, pushed into this corner and then finally erupting and finally kind of, you know, refusing to sublimate herself. You know, it was just kind of a nice way to, you know, mix that all up and make that, you know, different and make it something that would, you know, would feel unexpected. You know, I think also for me, it was a thing where, you know, it's very, you know, it's a very personal story, and it's something that that happened to, you know, my wife actually, and so it was this story I had known for a long time that felt like kind of something that I learned about her, where I was like, oh, I know you as this person now in our sort of, you know, timeline, so to speak, or whatever, you know, in this day and age that we're connecting. I know you, that feels like this other person, but I can't believe you made that choice, but I also understand it, and I wish I could have been there to hug you, and, you know, just all the sort of things that, all the feelings that arose from that, I think were really evocative for us and were something we wanted to explore in that episode.
So Love Life premiered on HBO Max in the end of May, I think May 29th. What was it, how heavy was it weighing on your shoulders that when you found out that you were going to be one of the flagship shows for HBO Max when it dropped, when it opened?
You know, I think it's funny because that's one of those things where obviously, you know, it's a pretty rare opportunity to be in that position, and it's extremely lucky to have the resources and attention of, you know, a big media company that believes in the thing that you made and wants to get it out there in the right way, and so that was amazing. You know, it's funny how much of kind of what I would imagine other people focus on was largely circumstantial, where, you know, we ended up being literally their first show, you know, but we were going to be one of their first shows, and, you know, all of the executives we've been working with had worked on a number of shows that, you know, unfortunately weren't able to finish given the pandemic. You know, we actually got lucky, made it just under the wire, where the last scene of the finale we shot on the evening of Thursday, March 12th. And then we had to shut down the next morning. So like literally if that had been scheduled for Friday instead of Thursday, we wouldn't have had an ending for the show. So, you know, I think on one level, it was a very practical sort of thing that was out of everyone's hands, which was them saying to us, can you finish the show with what you have, the footage you have? Because we did have a couple of days of pickups left. And you know, and we were lucky to be able to, and there were other shows that had more that they still had to shoot and weren't able to do that. So then, you know, of course, all of a sudden that becomes this new thing where we are, you know, their only kind of scripted show for grownups. And, you know, definitely one way to look at that is pressure, but for me, it really was about sort of what I started talking about, which was just the, you know, it was just the, you know, how lucky it felt to have that support and to be in that position. And I think especially for a show like this, that is largely, you know, it is grounded and character driven and not usually the kind of thing that gets put out there in this way. And sort of marketed and publicized in this way. It was really exciting to have them, you know, care about it and put themselves behind it like that. Just knowing that, you know, this sort of stuff of like, oh, them, you know, launching this as their first show, and the idea that it's some statement or something, I think is wrong, because it's actually more just about like these other shows that got shut down, and we would have been kind of one of a handful if not for you know, the craziness of everything that's happened in our world of late.
So what was your reaction when they called you and said, hey, we're going to all of a sudden now roll it out in batches rather than, because I know they were going to do it one by one for, you know, 10 weeks. And then all of a sudden it became three batches of three and one of four or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that was really exciting because I think, you know, from the beginning for me, I always envisioned the show as a very bingeable thing. And these half hour episodes are really dense, but I think they go by very fast. And so I think it's easy to kind of just go through them and, you know, and I think especially in the case of, for instance, like episodes 4, 5, and 6, where, you know, 5 is the flashback episode you just asked about, like seeing any one of those and having to wait a week, I think would just be a little bit of a bummer because it's not enough. You know, I think it's why even like, you know, ESPN put out that Michael Jordan documentary in, you know, sets of 2 hour, you know, 2 hour episodes, you know, 2 hour long episodes, because people, I think, especially these days are kind of craving, being able to sink their teeth into content in that way. And so I was really happy. I just was glad to, you know, A, that decision on behalf of HBO Max was made because so many people were loving the show and wanting it more, you know, wanting more of it and wanting that sooner, that was really exciting. But also knowing that even just the way it rolled out, where then, you know, 4, 5, and 6 are this little trilogy and they're all released together, you know, that became its own little kind of mini movie within the season in a way that I was really happy about. And each of these kind of chunks of episodes ended up, I think, sort of feeling cohesive in and of themselves, you know, and then also obviously as part of the larger season that's now, you know, available in its entirety. You know, it was great that, you know, people were responding to it and yeah, we just had to mix faster, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it absolutely works. It's particularly those episodes 4, 5, and 6, the Magnus bookend around the flashback episode. I mean, that is a perfect little self-contained movie there by itself. So that worked out really well with the new distribution model. Last question for you. Where are you with season 2? Because I have a pitch for you, but I'll let you go first.
Okay. Yeah, maybe your pitch is our pitch. You know, there's not a lot I'm allowed to talk about in terms of the details of it, obviously. But, you know, for me, like, it's a funny thing because normally the idea for a show is evident kind of from the first episode, and every episode is then made to kind of feel like it's, you know, that's why the pilot is supposed to be like, oh, this is what an episode of this show is going to feel like. And I think for us, within each season, from episode to episode, and then certainly from season to season, we're going to be really interested in changing things up as much as possible and throwing viewers for a loop as much as possible and saying, okay, I think you may feel like you know what this is going to be, but you actually don't. And you know, big part of that was this idea that I had from the very beginning, which was that from season to season, we would reset and follow a new character and a whole new set of love stories. And a big, you know, part of that, I think, was me leaning into a lot of my feelings about New York and the way that we used it, the way we shot there, and my feelings for the kind of, you know, magic of that city, having this kind of New York stories feeling of like, okay, we've, you know, followed this one life, and now we're going to go across the street and pick up with this person, and they're walking in this direction, and you're going to see everything that's happened to them, and the kind of case study of just all these different lives, and being able to kind of bridge the gap between an anthology show and a traditional sort of ongoing series where we are able to start fresh, but also keep it rooted in the same world and have characters reappear from previous seasons or have these people kind of weave in and out of each other's lives. You know, that was, I guess, again, it's weird to say that like, oh, the second season will show you what the show's really going to be. But I think that's something we're really excited to have the opportunity to do. And that to me is the sort of true potential and power of this series, is that hopefully if we get to do, you know, several seasons, it'll be, you know, a series where we've been able to explore all of those different experiences and perspectives and you know, everything I was kind of saying at the beginning.
Excellent. Well, this would not fit with your direction, obviously, as you were just describing it, but I thought, you know, as I was watching it, the character of Sarah pops so significantly, yeah, and Zoe Chow's performance is so great. Yeah. Every time she was off screen, I thought, you know, of course, I'm very interested in Darby. Anna Kendrick's great in it too. But when Sarah wasn't on screen, I was like, well, what is Sarah doing now? What is her journey like? What does the rehab look like for her? How did she meet this guy that she ends up marrying? So I thought it would be interesting to do like a whole, maybe not season two, but a season five, where it's like the flip side of the premiere story. You know, it's Sarah's story, not Darby's story, but you know, they still kind of flow into each other and what is, you know, all of that. So,
no, I think, you know, and that's something where, you know, again, I can't talk specifically about season two, but I think you did hit something that I've never talked about, but that is part of the idea in my head, which is like, you know, who's to say that she couldn't be the lead of season five or season three or whatever. And that the idea of being able to have this kind of like Rashomon setup where you're seeing the same episodes from varying perspectives and, you know, and even just in terms of like what it would started, you know, in season one as the kind of rom-com sidekick, for lack of a better, you know, archetype, you know, descriptor of the archetype, to then be able to follow that person and have the lead of season one become their sidekick. And
right.
And, you know, and all the different ways that these people are part of each other's stories, you know, is something that's certainly not lost on me. And so, you know, Zoe Chow, as you pointed out, and I think as everyone is seeing, is just unbelievable in the show. And she's someone who I'm excited to work with, you know, as soon as possible, whether it's on this show or not. And I guess what I will say is, over the life of the series, I'm hoping that none of what we're talking about is off the table.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, I look forward to it. Well, Sam, I think that's everything I had for you today. Thank you so much for the series. Thank you for the time here, and best of luck to you and your wife in the upcoming weeks ahead as we try to figure out what this new normal is like.
Thanks, Clarence. You too.
All right. Take care.
Awesome. Have a good day.
Thanks. Bye.